You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Welcome to the podcast. I am Corey, and I would like to welcome you all to a very special spooky season only special edition series, Brian and Corey's Spooky Corner. Say hello, Brian.
Hello.
That's Brian.
Yeah.
And I'm Corey, and we're going to talk spooks.
Talking spookies. All right.
So before we get into it, if you've listened to the Art History Babes for a while, you know we love spooky season. We love Halloween stuff. We love really connecting anything we can to spooky shit, like all about that. And also, if you've been with us for a while, you may have heard the episode I did with Brian on Velvet Buzzsaw, the Netflix horror flick that took place in the art world. And after recording that, we came up with this fun idea because Brian is kind of a horror film aficionado and fan of all things spooky as well.
Big fan of the spookies.
Yeah, we decided we're going to do a little 4-episode series of Brian and Corey's Spooky Corner. And each episode, we're going to break down a different spooky mythical creature and talk about it in relation to like film and art and just our general feelings and thoughts on the spookiness.
I love it. I love it. So we're starting the first episode by touching on some of my ancestral roots in the Irish world on banshees, the wailing woman.
My ancestors too. I'm Irish. Did you know that?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, we had a campaign, an ad campaign with Ancestry DNA, and I like got my I got my actual ancestry results.
So how Irish are you?
I'm pretty Irish. Like it's a good amount. Like there's a good chunk.
What's pretty? Like do they give you like the percent?
Yeah.
Do they break it down?
They do. I don't remember the exact percent, but they were able to pinpoint some of my Irish ancestry to this like rocky coastal mountainous area in Ireland where like outlaws fleeing like religious persecution basically like ran away to the hills in Ireland. And those are some of my ancestors. So
yeah, running for the hills.
Running for the hills. So I was hanging out. I was hanging my ancestral DNA was hanging out in the spooky, rocky cliffs of Ireland at one point with a bunch of outlaws, which I think is pretty badass.
That's wild. They can even figure that out.
I know. You want to know what else is crazy? We talked about this on an episode, but Ginny has ancestry from that same area. So like,
so spooky.
I know. So
the
like,
fate's bringing you together,
right? Like our ancestors were probably outlaws together, and they also probably encountered a banshee or two.
Well, yeah, that's not uncommon in what I found in Nomless research on banshees. Should we just go into basically what they are and how they showed
up? You might be wondering, what the heck is a banshee?
That's like a screaming ghost, right? Well, you're not wrong. It is. It is more specifically a keening ghost, which I, in the research for banshees, I learned a lot about keening as well, which I was pretty ignorant on. Did you learn anything on this with your research?
I mean, I looked it up because I saw the word, and then I looked it up, and I was like, "Oh, that's a whole thing." But
that's
I didn't know anything about it.
Thing. It's a whole. It is a whole thing. It's this ritualistic, basically mourning over the passing of somebody. It was done by just wailing, crying out during a funeral procession, and it was part of the whole funeral practice that it was even a position that people would pay someone to do. You would pay a woman to come to the funeral and wail and ask questions and basically interrogate, why did you leave us? Why are you gone? Why have you left me alone? It's such a visceral.
That is intense,
so intense,
man.
And it's such a, I mean, I have my own opinions on funerals, how that happened on in the U.S. and what's normal. One thing I was disappointed on when I finally went to a funeral of a loved one was how hands off it was, how mm-hmm. little of a role I felt like I took a part in it by saying goodbye. And I thought, and my gosh, what a, just something like this, by actually like this catharsis of letting it out and actually wailing and asking these questions instead of just keeping it in is such a, I don't know, such a release of emotion that it sounds strange at first to say, like, yeah, why would you pay for a woman to come and just fake cry at a wedding, or not a wedding, I keep saying wedding, at a funeral? But I think that is it. I think that's part of the mourning. It's very hands-on. It should be a tragedy to actually work through with your feelings. And that's something,
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, that's super interesting. And it's also kind of telling to me, you know, banshees are a creature from Irish mythology, and the keening thing is a practice of Irish culture. And there's also kind of a, I guess, I don't know, cultural like stigma or whatever, or idea that like Irish people are very good at expressing their feelings. I think there's a John Mulaney like joke where he talks about how like you just push them deep down inside, and even talks about bury the boy. Exactly. And that's real. I mean, I have a lot of Irish men in my family. Like, that's a very real thing. It's just not like expressing your feelings and working through them in an expressive way is not a super common thing, at least in like older generations of Irish culture. And the idea of outsourcing your expression of grief is very interesting to me. Like, I can't express it, but I'm going to pay this person to come express it. So at least there's like,
because this death like some
yeah,
wailing,
catharsis.
You know, this is, it sucks. And if I can't do it, that doesn't mean it shouldn't happen. So I gotta find, I mean, it's wild. And I think that's,
I love
such a beautiful catharsis.
Yeah.
I think it's rad. But anyway, that brings us, why you bring this up with banshees? So that's what a banshee is. She's this keening fairy female ghost spirit, as you will.
Yeah, the word banshee actually translates to woman of the fairy mound, or
yes,
fairy woman.
That shows up, that appears to family members of a soon-to-be dead relative, right? Is that correct? That it is,
yes.
That she is more of a messenger than a harbinger of death. She's a messenger that comes and, you know, cries out for keens, as we just covered, the lamenting the death of somebody. So as spooky as she is to see, because I'd be terrified to see a screaming, wailing ghost of a woman, if you ever saw one, the good news is you are never in danger, because she never appears to the ones who are about to die. She only appears to the family members. So I guess that's the bad news if you do see her.
Yeah.
You're safe, but your family members might not be. But I think that's fascinating. That, and maybe that's why what we'll talk about with her, how she's shown up in popular culture, how this is such a signature, unique spirit in like the, you know, the ghost mm-hmm. pantheon. Why isn't she more prevalent? I think it's because she's very hands off. She's not bringer of death. She's not a sinister ghost, as in most cases. She's more of just a, like I said, a messenger. She's just bringing the news that it's going to happen, and that's what it is.
Yeah, definitely. And there have been, I mean, if you research it, you'll find kind of different interpretations of this and like different examples of this. And some of them are, I guess you would say, more vicious or more scary. Like, there are tales and like ways in which the banshee figure has been molded into something that is more malicious and more like is coming for you and your family. And but really, in its at its roots, is it's this female spirit who heralds the death of family members by shrieking. There are even, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but there's a few examples in art. There's one painting in particular called La Belle Dame Sans Merci, The Banshee, by Henry Rheem. It's very fantastical and like very kind of soft. Like, she does it, the banshee in this image does not look scary at all. It's very soft, and it's not even frightening, really.
No.
So there's a whole spectrum, I guess, of how the banshee can be interpreted. And I think, when you move into popular culture, the concept of a female ghost spirit just wailing and like screeching intensely has kind of been taken from this mythology and then just, placed on figures for the sake of a scare, for the sake of being a scary figure in a horror movie or a ghost story.
Well, I mean, it is a scary thing too. Which I guess one example, we'll get more into how she's shown up in other pop cultures, but one example is, if you've read the Harry Potter books, there was a banshee that showed up in the third book when Professor Lupin was teaching all the kids about the Boggart, and Seamus Finnegan, when he opened the door, a banshee came out, which tells so much about Seamus Finnegan that his greatest fear is not so much a banshee, but losing a family member.
Oh man, that's
so sad.
Yeah. Right? That's just brilliant literature though. Like,
come on, here we go.
She is so smart when it comes to shit like that. I remember talking to one of our undergraduate professors about Harry Potter and how like the endless amount of mythology and things that come into play in that series of books is just unreal. Like, all the little things that as a child reading those books, you're just like, this is just a story. It actually like has these really brilliant connections to ancient culture and the entire development of literature and myth like over time, which is, I think, what makes those books so amazing. It's not necessarily just that it's a story about some kids that are witches, but it connects to the history of story and like mythology in so many ways. Like, I don't even remember that scene that you're talking about, but that's so brilliant,
And it's not, and it's not even addressed any further than that. I mean, just the implication of a banshee being Seamus Finnegan, an Irish, student at Hogwarts, that's the thing he'd be scaredest of. I remember reading the book, and until I did this research, I never thought anything of it. Like, oh, banshee is scary. Yeah, it's a scary ghost. I'd probably be scared of that too. But now, like, realizing what actually a banshee signifies and actually is my gosh, layers. Ooh, J.K. Rowling.
It's like an onion.
It's like an onion. Or a parfait.
ever meet anyone? They're like, no, I don't like no parfait. Everybody loves parfait.
And that's us talking Shrek.
That's going to be the next series. Talking Shrek.
Right after talking banshees, talking Shrek. Back to banshees, though. You were mentioning the painting of how, that she does appear in different ways. That this painting that I am looking at, I'm sure there seems to be a lot of variations, but she's red-haired, fair woman that's not scary. Yeah, it seems to be the interpretation of the banshee seems to also be correlated to just your interpretation of death on its way, as a natural part of life and as a thing that happens to all, and if it's a sad but sweet thing, it will present itself in that way. And this is me making some leaps, but just how I've been interpreting it. And to others, it feels like in other interpretations where she's been described as an old hag with like gray hair and wrinkled, angry eyes. Be to other people how they see death as this unfair, scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the description, like what a banshee typically looks like in Irish mythology. And then we can talk about some of the art and some of like the pop culture references.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
We have returned. Hope you enjoyed that message from our sponsors. We're talking banshees.
Talking banshees. Here we go. Round two.
Round two. Let's do it. All right. What's next? What else do we got? Description? Should we talk about description?
Yeah, we got a little bit into that. She can be seen as, I mean, it varies, right? She can be seen as a young, fair woman with red or white hair that can be seen wailing, crying, wringing the hands, keening, as we described. And I've also seen her appearing as an older woman in a thin cloak, mm-hmm. wrinkled, sinister sort of looking. I think that's the more mainstream opinion of the banshee, is the, you know, wailing, screaming, angry woman ghost.
Yeah, definitely.
And I also saw there was, I don't know if you saw, but it's a Celtic, it's not specifically Irish, but there is a Scottish, I guess, variation of the banshee, mm-hmm. that can be seen, instead of seeing, she isn't seen wailing or screaming, she's seen down by a river washing bloody garments. Usually just this, the same as the keening symbolized, you know, the wailing of a death of a family member. This one was more before a battle. A banshee was seen washing bloody clothing. It usually signified there was a loved one that wouldn't make it through the battle.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Some other potential descriptive factors that come into play. So like you said, like long streaming hair, sometimes red. One thing that stuck out to me is that a banshee's eyes are often red from weeping.
Yeah. And that's funny how that's probably got construed throughout the retellings of the story, that the red meant evil, mm-hmm. whereas red probably originally just meant weeping.
Yeah, just crying, lots of crying, lots of lamenting, just going for it. Do you want to talk about some of these fun art historical examples I found?
I'd love to, more than anything. Let's do it.
More than anything in the entire world.
This is it. This is all I'm here for today.
The first one I kind of mentioned already was La Belle Dame Sans Merci, The Banshee, 1897 by Henry Rheem.
Yeah.
And this one, I mean, like, if I looked at this painting, I would never guess it was a banshee. Like ever. Like, she's got this kind of red hair. She's got this crown thing, pink dress, just the colors in the image. And they're in the forest. And it's just very, like, I think fairy for sure, but I wouldn't jump to banshee. But there is a knight on the ground who appears to likely be dying. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing
dead.
That's
yeah.
I'm guessing that's where the banshee association comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a beautiful painting, but I don't think I would look at this and ever think like, oh shoot, that's a banshee.
And she's not alone back there too. I would associate one of the spectral ghosts in the background to be,
mm-hmm.
which they are not. I mean, even in this one, she doesn't seem to be keening. She doesn't seem to be wailing. She just appears, but her presence is all it takes.
It's all it takes, guys.
It's all it takes. She's just bringing the bad news. She's not doing it. She's not the sinister person. She's just, you know, like, she's the Postmates of it. She's the brain, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't get mad at the Uber Eats. Yeah. It's the restaurant's fault.
Is that the modern day don't kill the messenger?
Yeah.
Don't get mad at the Uber Eats.
Yeah. That's it.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And then, so the second one I'm excited to talk about is a contemporary example of using the banshee in art. And it is from Kiki Smith, 1991. It's called Banshee Pearls. And it is a series of 12 lithographs that are actually self-portraits. And they are assembled together. They're able to be separated. So the actual like order in which they are assembled is not fixed. She wanted it so you could kind of switch up the order if you felt necessary. But they are 12 self-portraits, and then there are also images of skulls, masks, beasts, and just like spooky imagery, like sporadically throughout the, I guess you could kind of say it's like a collage.
Yeah, I get that collage, especially seeing them all together on this tiled form.
Yeah, it feels collage-esque. And in reading about this work, apparently Kiki Smith's father once called her a banshee in high school. After that, young Kiki Smith began thinking of herself as some sort of death figure. And that's what she's trying to like explore and express with this work.
I tell you what, this is spooky to look at. This is all monochromatic. It's all very abrasive with its cuts, you know, and its drips and it's wow. Yeah, it definitely invokes a sort of anxious feeling.
Definitely. I mean, it's very early, like I think a lot of early 90s grunge aesthetic, definitely. Yeah, that grungy, like handmade collage type feel that's kind of freaky, like meant to express heavy things like death and also being mad at your dad for calling you a banshee. Yeah. You know? Got that whole feeling. For sure. I really like this, though. I think it's a really interesting piece, for sure.
It's got a sort of feeling of, I don't know if you're familiar with Dave McKean. He did all the covers to the Sandman series by Neil Gaiman. But this feels like a cousin to his illustrations.
Interesting.
Void of all color and fun, by the way. But still, in the style, it's very, very signature, I think.
And then the last one I have is actually, it's going to be like the first image that pops up if you Google Banshee. It's like on the Wikipedia page, but it is the Bunworth Banshee. And it's from a book of legends called Fairy Legends and Traditions of the South of Ireland by Thomas Crofton Crocker, 1825. And it has illustrations along with these legends. And this is the illustration that accompanies the Banshee. And I feel like there's a reason that this image is like on the Wikipedia page of, you know, the images we've been able to find of Banshees. I think it does the best job of wrapping up as many of those characteristics as possible. It kind of hits the big ones. I mean, this image is like a spooky image of this cloaked woman there's like the moon in the background and she seems to be by like a shore. There's a sketched kind of creepy tree branch above her. And I mean, she looks scared. She looks unhappy.
Yeah.
She looks like she's probably been crying for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. I would also make that assumption. She's bent over. She's in a very, hunched position. She does not look scary. I think the first pass at it, you're like, ooh, this is like a cloaked woman under a spooky tree and a lake and a castle in the background. You're like, this is a Halloween picture. But then you get a closer look at her face and it's not angry. It's sad. Mm-mm. Her hands are even folded in like a prayer sense of like almost like a pleading sort of way.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So she's not having a good time. That's for sure.
No. And that's very characteristic of the Banshee because she's keening. These are great. These pictures are also awesome. And I love how different they are from each other. Like just the contrast between the first one with all the colors and the lush and the spirits and the beauty of the Banshee in contrast to like a modern day monochromatic, like angsty sort of interpretation of it.
Yeah, definitely. And if you want to see these images, we'll have a link to them up on our website for you. So just hit arthistorybabes.com, go to the podcast page, and you can see the images we're talking about.
Enter promo
because the
code.
Internet.
Banshees.
And did you say enter promo code Banshees?
Yeah, it's my first podcast. I feel like it's always, it always feels like it's part of it. Enter promo code XXX Banshees.
That'd be such a good promo code, though. Banshees.
Talking
all right.
Banshees. So, yeah,
talking
my turn.
Banshees.
My turn. I want to talk about pop culture.
Turn.
Yeah. I'll say it. I'll start off by saying I was a little disappointed by how little she's shown up, I feel like, in modern day pop culture, thinking like, Banshee, that's such a signature ghost. What kind of spooky movies are out there? Where has she shown up that's like been pretty noteworthy? And not much. And I think it's what I mentioned earlier, how very hands-off she is. She's not the cause. She's a very passive figure instead of an active participant in someone's passing. The examples that I found are, well, we'll start with the big ones, like the animated movie Scooby-Doo Abracadabra-Doo. There's a Banshee in that one.
Classic.
Classic. We all remember this movie. I mentioned the Harry Potter. There was a Supernatural season 11 episode with a Banshee in it.
Didn't we like marathon Supernatural together?
Hell yeah, we did. It's great.
Yeah. Have you watched it since then?
No. It's still going, though. I applaud them for keeping it going.
Absurd.
I love it. I guess maybe I know. I mean, hot take. I love the X-Files, but it definitely kind of lost its way with its smoking man sort of, and it got away from the creature feature of the week, which made it really cool. And I think Supernatural did not do that. Maybe, I mean, it gets a little heaven and hell, demons and angels and all that, but it also sticks to the creature feature, which is so great. We just want weekly spookies. Come on.
I know. I think they come back from hell like 12 times. Like,
who hasn't?
True that, my friend.
It's tough
true
out there
that.
Right now.
Yeah, maybe I'll watch Supernatural after this just to like get nostalgic.
You could watch the 1959 Walt Disney film, Darby O'Gill and the Little People. It was a Irish Disney movie, live action, featuring a young Sean Connery, which I sadly had no idea this movie even existed, but it has a following. People love it. And I think it's probably just because I was not alive earlier than 1990. But it features leprechauns. It features a banshee. And the clip that I saw of the banshee is rather spooky. She's a very spectral, cloaked figure. In the movie, she looks like a blue Dementor, for comparison's sake. And that's another example of a banshee showing up. But more modern day, if taking it out of film and TV, there was just on Broadway here this last year, a show called The Ferryman by Jeb Butterworth. And it featured an Irish family during the IRA hunger strikes, struggling with how much to engage or not engage with the awful troubles that were happening then. But there is a monologue in there that prominently features banshees and using banshee imagery to express the sort of magnitude of the loss the Irish people had. There's one image that she's talking about in this monologue about how her love had died in this war, and she was with her sister, and she saw that they were in this field and they weren't alone. There was thousands of banshees around them. Especially after doing this research, seeing the show and hearing this monologue, it's such a haunting, harrowing sort of experience hearing this story of the banshees, but then learning that banshees are their messengers of like a specific death. So seeing a mm-hmm. field of thousands of banshees is such an image of like, wow, oh shit, there's a
mega death
in all of the pop culture uses of the banshee that I looked into. I thought that one rang the truest because I think that was truest to what its intent was. This sad sort of messenger.
Yeah.
Rather than a screaming, spooky ghost.
Yeah, definitely. Because I can't think of like specific examples, but I know for a fact that I have watched many a spooky show or horror movie that has included, just a female ghost that pops up and screams at you. And I think there's some connection to the banshee there, but...
Yeah, I think they're using the imagery, but without using the actual origin of it was, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Which also, it's interesting, I don't know, just how we can trace different folklore legends back to the kind of piecemeal back together. Like, well, we took this from this, we took this image from this, or we took this meaning from this, that I think is so fascinating with, spooky imagery and folklore in general.
Totally. The way humans try to make sense of their fear is infinitely fascinating.
Yeah, I have a banshee story to share.
Ooh.
Disclaimer, I've never seen a banshee, okay?
I was just gonna say, did you meet a banshee?
Yeah, we're best buds. I come from a very Irish family on my father's side, and my grandmother in particular is a spooky woman. She's not a big fan of Halloween, but she always is finding little signs that she's like 100% sure this is what this is. This is means this. I found this golf ball in the pocket of a pants. That's, of course, it's a sign for this. It's a lot of this. But I grew up with that and thinking, yeah, of course, that's exactly what that is. It's this comfort that we have as human beings of why we tell ghost stories, is there's this comfort of knowing that there is actually something, that loved ones aren't gone. They're still there. They're just somewhere else. Bringing it back to banshees, a few months ago, it was like late at night. I heard like a big knock at the door, and I got up and I went to the door and I came back, and my girlfriend asked, what are you doing? And I was like, there's someone was knocking at the door. She was like, no, there wasn't. And I'm positive I heard this knock at the door. Fast forward a few months later, I learned that there is this, I guess not a tradition, but there's this thing in my family where if loved ones pass a few days before, other family members will hear a knock. And I had never known this. This is all news. I was just telling this to my stepmother. Oh, this is a kind of weird thing that happened the other night. And she got all weird and got all quiet about it. And she explained that, well, actually, around that time, your great uncle had passed. She went on this whole story and opened this whole door of superstition that I had never known was part of my family, that when my father passed a few years ago, my cousin heard a knock and so forth. There's all these different stories of people hearing these knocks beforehand. And so they're not banshees, but it's still the knocks, I feel like, is exactly what the purpose of the banshee was, where this warning, this message that, hey, something's coming. It's not direct. It's not like the banshees don't show up and go, your father's going to die. It's not, she's a wailing, screaming woman. And so in that way, I feel like this is a spooky real life thing that happened to me that I feel like is along those lines as well.
Man, that just gave me hella chills, dude. That's a spooky story.
And who knows? Maybe no one actually did knock at the door. I'm just saying, like, I swear, I heard a knock at that door, and then I in passing, told my family, and then learned this whole thing that my family
so has. Interesting. That's so interesting. Wow.
Yeah. Have you ever seen a banshee? Have you ever heard any knocks?
We want to know.
We want to know. Call in 1-800 Talking Banshees. Use the promo code Banshees. And we're brought to you by
Banshees Are Us.
Banshees Are Us.
Oh my God. But that's so interesting. Do you ever listen to the Spooked podcast?
No. What's that podcast?
What?
It's called Spooked?
It's called Spooked. Right, okay. After we get off this call, you need to look it up immediately. Spooked. It is Spooked. It's amazing. It's, I think, on the third season, and okay, they're real life ghost stories. Like, they talk to people and they tell their stories, and it's really well done. And you should probably go on the show and talk about your knocks.
Yeah, spooky.
Spooky.
We're talking spookies.
We're talking spookies. But that's so interesting. Thank you for sharing that anecdote, because I'm spooked.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, we're in the spooky season.
I know.
It is the beginning of September. We're there.
Oh, my God. Didn't even say anything at the beginning of this episode. Happy Friday the 13th, full harvest moon, my friend.
Oh, this is it. I know. What a coincidence. What a beautiful, spooky day that we get the harvest moon on a Friday the 13th.
Dude,
oh, man.
The next full moon on a Friday the 13th isn't supposed to happen for like 30 years.
So get them while they're hot, everybody. Get all those spookies. Turn on, if you're hearing this, you probably missed it, but I am going to go on a movie marathon. I'm going to plug in those Friday the 13th movies. Oh. Part 6 is still the best one. I don't know what you're going to do. Are you going to watch Over the Garden Wall again?
Probably. I watch it like once a week. So
yeah, ain't that just the way?
Over the Garden Wall, so good. I know. I've talked to multiple people today already. I talked to my cousin and I talked to Natalie about how we feel an urge to like get naked and like bask in the moonlight, like either go skinny dipping, uh-huh, or like go streaking or something.
Right.
I don't know why that's such a common urge to like full moon Friday the 13th. I want to be naked.
Oh, full witch. Yeah,
exactly. I want to be naked and I want to dance in the moonlight. So that might happen. I don't know.
To live deliciously, as it would be, right?
Yes, as it were. Yeah. Exactly.
As it were. Philip the goat.
Oh, Philip.
Have you seen The Witch? You should see The Witch.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because we have brought up The Witch on this podcast more times than anything.
It's a hell of a good movie.
Anytime anything remotely reminds us, it's like, oh man, The Witch.
Man,
The Witch is so good.
Live deliciously with Black
Phillip. It is one of my favorite spooky movies, hands down, easily. I love The Witch.
Well, go watch The Witch, because sadly there are no Banshee movies that feature the Banshee, because I guess money screenwriters would probably already figured this out, that I'm just not figuring it out. How do you make a movie about a very passive thing? You know, like, we're going to follow the day in the life of a Banshee, just the 9 to 5 crying and wailing and saying, dude, your sister is going to die. I'm like, well, fuck. I know. Don't shoot the messenger. And then she goes on to the next
one.
That
sounds like a challenge to me, to someone out there who needs to write a screenplay about the Banshee. And make it good. Make it spooky.
Make it spooky.
This was episode one of Corey and Brian Spooky Corner. Hope you enjoyed. And what are we talking about next week, Brian? Are we talking?
We're talking Wendigo.
Oh, the Wendigo. Yes.
The Wendigo.
Yes.
Here to the woods. Spooky cannibal beast.
That spirit that god. Is definitely one I learned about from Supernatural. I remember that episode. I remember the
Wendigo.
Yeah, the Wendigo episode. I remember being like, what is this thing? And then I just reread the first collection of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Hell yeah, you did.
I did. There's a story about the Wendigo in it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's good.
Because all those stories are based on folklore.
Oh, I know. It's so, yeah. And this is something that child Corey didn't appreciate, but obviously adult nerd Corey appreciates, is like the bibliography, basically the references are legit in the back of that book.
Oh yeah. There's 50 pages of like, yeah, this is actually where all these came from.
Yeah.
And then your world opens up.
It really does. It tells you exactly where the story originated. It's So if you haven't checked out the references for Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, you got to check that out, because there's good information back there.
Good stuff.
But yeah, so we will see you all for more spooks. And we're going to be talking. If you don't know what a Wendigo is, well, just wait. Just wait. Give it a minute. Just give it a minute.
Second. You can wait. Gosh, she's going to be there forever. It's like a spirit god.
Just give it a minute, man. And then we'll tell you. Okay. But hope you enjoyed our episode on Banshees. Thanks for hanging out with me, Brian, and talking about scary stuff.
Talking Banshees.
All right, thanks.
Good. See ya.
Thanks, lovely listeners. We'll catch you next time.
I'm a goddamn actor. I'm a performer, Corey. I'm going to use my body as an instrument and a temple. I'm going to use it. I'm going to project to the back of the room. Like, this is my one-man show, and you're on the phone.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.